Well, hello everybody. Welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we are here again for another week of our Turning Towards Life project and conversation. And Lizzie, this is, just so you know, this is the 216th week that we've done this in a row. So welcome to all of you who have been with us since week one, and welcome to the many of you who have, of course, joined us since then. We're so glad to have you with us. And this is part of an unfolding conversation in which what we're shortly going to do is to take a wonderful source, a piece of text, Lizzie, that you have chosen for us, which I'm so looking forward to jumping into. And we will read it, and then we'll see what conversation flows from it together. And this is really by way of, I suppose what we've been doing, Lizzie, for these past four and a bit years is, in one way or another, addressing the same question again and again and again, which is, what is it to turn towards our lives rather than away from them? What is it to inhabit our lives rather than flee from them? What is it to take up a stand of welcome to whatever's here, whether it's joy or grief or confusion or complexity or simplicity? To find a way to, you know, what I'm finding happening is this practice that we're into is a really powerful practice for helping me to root myself in my life. Mm. You know, this very, very fleeting, brief time that we get to actually be here, and we get half an hour on a Sunday morning to practice being here together and to lend one another our presence. But also, the reason I'm saying all of this is sort of by a big wide welcome to everyone who's with us, because some of you are with us live on Facebook on this Sunday, and some of you are with us on podcasts and on YouTube and all the different Instagram, all the different ways this gets into the world. Mm. And for me, there's such a feeling of us all doing this together.
Yeah.
So I want to throw the net of welcome wide around that all of us who are here and the others who will join us as we go, as well as to you and me, Lizzie, as we begin.
I realise as you say that, Justin, I'm not sure if it's an intention or a kind of implicit truth of us being together, which is that my wish is that people feel like they're actually in genuine relationship with us because of how we're doing this together. It's like an emergent something. So we're not bringing forward something that's done and dusted and we've planned it all, and which means that you sometimes can't really see and feel the person behind something. It's not that. It's like, because it's emergent and we're including ourselves so fully in it, because that's the nature of how we're doing this, that whoever's listening, watching, we're in relationship with you and you're in relationship with us. Like that's the hope that I have. And certainly when people tell us what it's like, that's the kind of thing that they say too, which is, you know, it's like we're on the journey together kind of thing. Even though our sound voices are coming out, it doesn't feel like it's separate from everyone else's voices as well. And I'm really glad of that. It feels very alive and risky in the best kind of way, you know, not really knowing and allowing that to be here, because it's also a normal part of life to not know. So we can all not know together and see what happens.
It's the condition of all of life, isn't it?
Well, quite. Really. I spend the majority of my life not knowing what the hell's going on, and really. And I am, just in the acknowledgement of that by doing this really helps. I'm really glad to be here.
I think it might be worth, as he's saying, just before we get into the source, sometimes we remember to say this, that this is an expression of a much bigger commitment and body of work that you and I and many others are involved in, which is a something called Third Space. And I so often want to say to people, if you're interested in finding out about the something from which Turning Towards Life appeared and arose, then the place to go is wearethirdspace.org on the web. And you can find out what we get up to there and what we're committed to that had this conversation become possible in the first place.
Yeah.
And also you can email us. You can chat with us on Facebook, but you can also email us Justin or Lizzie at turningtowards.life, or even, you might not know this, Lizzie, hello at turningtowards.life. We'll come to both of us. We'd so love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and also the exciting thing for me, Justin, is this. So basically, if anybody doesn't know this, Justin is the person who actually makes things happen in real life, where like you can type your email address in and something happens in the website, those kinds of things. And I know I'm saying that in a very simplistic way, Justin, but your way of being able to do things is extraordinary to me. And Justin did this really cool thing where he's enabled on our website, on turningtowards.life, on the homepage, just as soon as you get there, you can type in your email address into the box and you will get these conversations emailed to you weekly as well. So sometimes it's difficult to listen, or you haven't got time, or, you know, things happen in life or whatever. But if you wanted them to come into your email box, because that's the way that you receive things and can click on the link and feel like it's more possible, Justin has very cleverly enabled that to happen. So you can literally go to turningtowards.life, type your email address in, and receive these on a weekly basis into your inbox and listen in whatever way you want. So you can click on the podcast or the video or just audio, whatever. So I wanted just to say that, because I think that's really cool that people can do that. And it's just another way of accessing us. So please feel free to ferret around in the website and type your email address in and receive this on a weekly basis if you wanted to do it that way. So now we have this source by the extraordinary John O'Donohue, and it's about beauty. So I'm going to read first, and then Justin, you can go for it. So here we go. We have often heard that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. This is usually taken to mean that the sense of beauty is utterly subjective, that there's no accounting for taste because each person's taste is different. The statement has another, more subtle meaning. If our style of looking becomes beautiful, then beauty will become visible and shine forth for us. We will be surprised to discover beauty in unexpected places where the ungraceful eye would never linger. The graced eye can glimpse beauty anywhere. But beauty does not reserve itself for special elite moments or instances. It does not wait for perfection, but is present already secretly in everything. When we beautify our gaze, the grace of hidden beauty becomes our joy and our sanctuary.
Thank you, Lizzie. So before I read it, I will also say, for anyone who hasn't found this yet, you can always find the source beforehand on our Facebook page and on Instagram, and you can always find it with the videos and the audio. It's always in the notes that comes with this. So this is from John O'Donohue. We have often heard that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. This is usually taken to mean that the sense of beauty is utterly subjective, that there's no accounting for taste because each person's taste is different. The statement has another, more subtle meaning. If our style of looking becomes beautiful, then beauty will become visible and shine forth for us. We will be surprised to discover beauty in unexpected places where the ungraceful eye would never linger. The graced eye can glimpse beauty anywhere, for beauty does not reserve itself for special elite moments or instances. It does not wait for perfection, but is present already secretly in everything. When we beautify our gaze, the grace of hidden beauty becomes our joy and our sanctuary.
Justin. Ooh, this is a relieving piece of writing for me. And what an invitation to feel that there's hidden beauty everywhere. And all it takes is our beautifying our gaze, and that we could do that. It's not a given what's beautiful and what's not. It's to do with us.
I love those moments where I feel like, oh, it's to do with me. There's not some fixed thing that I'm gazing upon. It's to do with me what it looks like. It's to do with me what it feels like. It feels like I then have power over my experience rather than feeling like I'm on the end of something telling me what I am and what everything is. So I'm really grateful for this. And it was so interesting, Justin, when you were talking, what arose to me was this. I remember someone saying to me once that the most profound kind of work they'd done was to go to a naked workshop where the deal was everyone's naked. And the intention was to be undoing what everyone's notion of what everyone else's body should and does look like. Because we can't really sense bodies underneath clothes very, I mean, we can in some way, but not really. And so we have all these stories about what our bodies should be like. And of course, when you step into a room with just general populace of human, our bodies are all just completely unique and different and different features and to the, like, I don't know what the mathematical term is, but, you know, to the nth degree, like the degrees of uniqueness are extraordinary. And yet what's happened to us is that our notion of body beautifulness has been reduced to what we see in magazines or on the telly or wherever else. And I feel like it feels like such an important step to know that we can beautify our gaze around any kind of physicality. You know, I'm thinking of my having born a baby tummy, and there are parts of it that look a certain way because of having had a baby in my tummy. And I could complain about that and say, oh, that doesn't look very nice or something. Or I could see the beauty in what my tummy did and what got made and the experience that it went through and the kind of the mark that got left by something profound rather than there's something wrong with it. And I feel like so much becomes possible when we can see beyond and cultivate something beyond the conditioning that we've had about what our bodies, but also anything else, should look like. And it's also reminding me of this tree in the park where we live around here that fell down and then managed to kind of extend its roots down into the ground once it had fallen. So there's a lying down tree with this huge, big, beautiful blossoming and doing all the things trees do, but it's fallen. And you could say, well, that's a, you know, that's a broken tree. I don't want to look at the broken tree. Or you could say, oh, look, that's an unusual and beautiful and open expression of what happened. And how could that not be beautiful? So then the conversation just gets so interesting because it's about moving around the world with bodies, with trees, with pavements, with whatever is on our doorsteps in our homes, and seeing that this grace, this graceful gaze, having our gaze become graceful. Like the possibilities feel endless.
Oh my goodness, there is so much in here, both from John O'Donohue and then from everything you've said, Lizzie. I'm kind of feeling a bit overwhelmed by the angles on this. And I think I want to take up, I think where I feel moved to start is to respond to your, the thing about bodies that you're saying. Maybe I sort of come about it sort of obliquely. So one of the things that when I read John O'Donohue's work, this passage, one of the things that I saw about it is that he's saying something absolutely radical that our society does not really allow for most of us, the society, the sort of wider culture that we're in. So he's saying, so if beauty is in the eye of the beholder, in his first sentence, which is usually taken to mean that the sense of beauty is utterly subjective, which I think is the common sense way that we've been taught to look, which is, in a way, is to say there is no inherent beauty in anything. It's purely subjective. Everything in the world is flat and lifeless and cold, and it's maths and it's electrons and it's you know, if and that we add it, we humans add beauty to what we see. And I want to extend see to hear, feel, experience, to sort of take it in its widest sense. Then there are a number of, which I think is what he's pointing out is in our culture, there are a number of really extraordinary consequences about that. First of all, if you tell me something is beautiful, Lizzie, I can discount it because I can just say, that's just Lizzie. Mm-hmm. I can say equally well, no, it's just nothing. The second thing is the world itself is empty and devoid of life. It's at heart meaningless, and we happen just to be adding some kind of meaning on top of it, and that's always fragile and subjective in the way that he's talking about. And then the third thing is, because of all of that, what we then take to be beautiful is shaped very, very strongly by what our culture tells us we ought to take for beautiful, rather than that we might actually look and do this act that he invites us into, which is to look with the graced eye, which is to be ones who uncover. I want to say uncover rather than discover, but they're very, very closely related words. To uncover beauty in unexpected places where the ungraceful eye, the eye that is not looking in a graceful way, would never linger. And I think that this is where we come back to. So the alternative to this, to the world is empty and flat and we're just adding it, is that the world is inherently beautiful. It's filled with beauty, waiting to be disclosed, and that what we are not the ones who add beauty on top because of some opinion that we have, but we are the ones who disclose beauty when it's there through the way we look, but also the way we talk to one another and the way we listen and the practices we have and the rituals we have and the art we have, all of that. So if you come back to bodies, the trouble is not that bodies are not beautiful, filled with mystery and wonder and grace and extraordinariness, and our bodies can be all kinds of things to us, the supporters of life and the bringers of life, and they can be inhibited and ill, they can be injured and heal, all of that, you know, the obvious things to say, but the point is that the beauty of our bodies cannot just be then what our culture tells us beauty is. Now, culture will tell us that person's body is beautiful and to be admired and longed for or whatever, and that person's body is to be ignored and discarded. And but that all comes from the point of view that beauty is being made by the current trend in opinion, which is then being shaped very strongly by the various kinds of the media that we have around us and the images that we get shown. And John O'Donohue is making the invitation that you just made, which is to say, what if we were to start off with the premise that what we are as humans is the disclosers of, or the uncoverers of, beauty, which might be hard because we might see around bodies, it's really hard because we've all been so shaped by what we've been shown. So if we get in a situation where we see the bodies of many other people and we find out that bodies mostly aren't anything like the images of beauty that we get shown, that the vast majority of bodies are nothing like that, and even the bodies of the people who look like that don't really look like that.
Yeah.
We have to do quite a lot of work to shift our way of seeing, to go instead of, I don't know, one way you could go is, oh no, the world has no beauty in it at all. The world is just horrible and ugly and repulsive. And you can do that with bodies and you can do that with anything. Mm-hmm. Or to go, my job, that we've never been taught to do, our job is to be the ones together who look with a gaze that allows the beauty of what's here and in all of its astonishing forms to come forward and to surprise us, not because we're just trying to fit everything into our pre-existing category.
Oh gosh, I feel so moved, Justin, by this, I don't know what to call it, like standing in a different place that you're inviting in what you're saying, which is, feels to me like there's a combination here of, it's not, beauty isn't subjective to the point where it only exists if I deem it beautiful. Although I have to find my graceful gaze in order to find something beautiful. And at the same time, I'm feeling this powerful invitation of something is already beautiful, whether I see it or not. Like there's something about that that's really moving to me. You know, often like in a forest, I think whether or not I'm here, this extraordinariness is continuing all the time. Whether or not I'm paying attention to it, whether or not I'm benefiting from it, whether or not I'm witnessing it, feeling what it's like to be here, smelling the smell of the forest, this is available all the time. This abundance of experience and scent and feel and what it feels like beneath one's feet. It's already there. That's what I'm hearing you say, like the already there-ness of everything. And then that already there-ness combined with our graceful gaze brings about the experience of beauty. And we have this double opportunity of something existing in itself, wholly as itself. And then what we bring to that existence or readiness in terms of our graceful gaze. And then those things come together and we get to experience the forest or a tree or each other in what feels to me like an intended way of being human. Like this is a beautiful setup, you know. We have these, you know, in these beautiful bodies, we have the capacity to experience and perceive and inquire and reflect and wonder and be still and allow and be impressionable and to act. And all of that is in relationship to all these elements around us. So I'm feeling the kind of structural excellence of being human, of all the opportunities that we have, because this hidden beauty might not necessarily be hidden if we unhide it by our way of practicing, as you said, of reflecting, of wondering. So I'm feeling very led into further realms, like the puny little tree. I call it the puny little tree outside our window, which is like a street tree that doesn't really have much soil because it's in a pavement. And it's very thin and occasionally has something on it, but I'm not sure. Yeah, it doesn't feel very abundant. But I look at it every single day as I'm changing Vespa's nappy in that room next to us. And it's beautiful. You know, so I'm feeling the opportunity to re-perceive and re-perceive and re-perceive. And of course, that's an endlessly deepening possibility. I can re-perceive that tree every hour if I wanted and wonder what it really is and what even a leaf is. Because I'm feeling the kind of the chance to begin again all the time and feeling that part in me kind of opened up so that I can practice with all of the givens on my street and in my house and the people in my family and friends. And it feels like a deep kind of ever benevolent invitation that's an opportunity for experiencing the world in an extraordinary way, again and again, in more deepening ways.
The way you're inviting us, Lizzie, to cultivate that of ourselves which is sensitive to the beauty that's already here. When we come into contact with our own bodies or the bodies of others, or the tree in the street that doesn't have enough soil and yet is doing its thing, and that you reminded us that what you said about beauty being somehow, when we do that, what we're doing is I'm going to say it in a slightly different way, as participating in the beauty that's here getting expressed. We become participants in it. It's being expressed, but in our encounter with it, it gets expressed because we can attune ourselves that way, and we can attune ourselves to one another. And you talked about lots of examples where we might start from a different place. We might start from the hopelessness of it all, or the ugliness of the tree that can't quite, you know, imagine, yeah, but what if that tree was somewhere else? Or what if my body or your body was a different shape, because it could be and it's not, or, you know, all those kind of things. And so it seems to me that's, I know I was feeling into what I've been trying to practice just in my work, coaching and teaching, and now sitting with you, that in a way in line with what John O'Donohue is saying, I've been really purposefully practicing sitting with someone and starting with loving them very, very fiercely for the beauty that they are, rather than coming out there all the ways this isn't quite as I want it, and all the ways at which you're not quite as you want you to be, and all of that. And I have to say, actually, this morning, Lizzie, I woke up and I read the Sunday newspaper before I got up, and I noticed how the prevailing every page of this paper came from somewhere very different from what John O'Donohue is inviting. It was like the frame was, our job is to uncover the awfulness everywhere. Everywhere. And it got me thinking whilst you were speaking about how it can't be as simple as just saying everything is beautiful in some with no distinctions in it, because sometimes what we encounter is cruelty, and sometimes what we encounter is selfishness or forgetfulness, or sometimes we encounter trauma or wounding or illness that stunts people's possibilities, or poverty or injustice or structural inequalities or racism. And so it seems to me that it seems obvious to me in speaking about it, that to simply say, oh, everything is beautiful in some simplistic way would be to flatten everything again and to leave us with nothing that we would want to take care of. Oh, it's okay that you're starving because it's beautiful. It's kind of easy to go that way if we're not deeply paying attention, sort of some kind of tuning out of everything. And so that's why I think that this line that John O'Donohue says at the end, which is really important, that the beauty is present secretly in everything. So for example, to find ourselves in the middle of understanding an injustice, and then looking for the beauty, possibility, courage, dedication, love, hope, steadfastness in ourselves and in the others involved. Or for example, when somebody that it's to look, it's to not to treat everything as if beauty was everything, but as if beauty were in everything and in everyone. Now, this is also tricky, because then it then gets us back into this, like, if we come back to bodies, then we can easily then fall into the trap of the other side, which is to go, well, of course there's beauty in your body if you would only lose a few pounds and tone up your muscles and have some surgery. And so it can't be that either. But somehow it seems to me that the point here is that there is beauty in everything waiting to be apprehended, that we can also can inspire us to magnify that which is beautiful and life-giving and nourishing in the world. Rather than treating it all as if it's meaningless, there's nothing I can do, or as if somehow there's also nothing for me to do because everything's just just beautiful in the same way.
Yeah. And what's really landing with me, Justin, is I think you're also referencing this word sanctuary. Like, to feel like beauty could be a sanctuary feels really true. Like, when really difficult things are happening, there might be places I turn to that distract me or help me avoid or help me get through the day or something, which I just know very well in myself. But if I could turn to beauty as a means of sanctuary, maybe that would have things unfold differently that time. So sanctuary meaning for me anyway, like somewhere I can put things down. You know, that if I can be, so at the moment, you know, I wander around the streets a lot because the leaves are so beautiful. And it kind of takes my breath away, the kind of colour of a leaf that falls at its kind of peak of beauty, of recognisable shining beauty of this kind of red, orangey, yellowness. And that feels like sanctuary to me. And I could completely not even know that it was autumn and that the leaves were falling. Or I could let myself raise my eyes to the sky and wonder what the colour the trees are. And that feels like a way more life-giving response to whatever difficulty I've been in than all the other things I could do, like, I don't know, eat a packet of chocolate biscuits, or, I mean, of course I do that too, you know, but it's like I can see that there's sanctuariness in this beauty thing because it's another place I can practically go to that fills me up with something that's life-giving rather than keeping me in the cycles that I can get into. So I'm really feeling the sanctuary of beauty right now, and then kind of clocking why it's just excellent to go for a walk. When in doubt, go for a walk, because there's just opportunities. You know, I don't live in a particularly country place with lots of trees, but there are cracks in the pavement and rose bushes in people's little front gardens. In our terraced houses, people have got bushes in the front that have all kinds of things to admire in them. And of course, Vesper, my little two-year-old, is the most excellent, grace-filled eyes of beauty. She makes me stop and look at, you know, abandoned pieces of wood and bits of fence that are broken off, even, as beautiful. And so I'm really feeling the sanctuariness of this and how it feels such an appropriate place to turn when things are not okay, or whether I'm feeling anxious or worried or in pain or wounded. Like, beauty feels like a very inviting, reasonable, obvious answer to what do I do next? How about some beauty? How about the sanctuary of beauty?
Well, I'm going to be left with this, Lizzie, which is imagining Vesper finding some old bit of wood and picking it up. Of course, knowing Vesper a little, I can imagine how she would do that. And that we in our adulthood, when we've been colonized by the narrative that nothing is really beautiful, that the world is empty and not filled with a kind of magical aliveness, when we've forgotten all of that, it might be very tempting to say to a two-year-old, put it down, not that, put it down, let's hurry along. But actually what she is reteaching us is the wonder that can be present right in the most ordinary something that she found on the corner of the street that most of us would walk by.
Mm.
And some piece of wood has a history to it. It's also been a tree at some point in its life. Somewhere it was a tree, and so somewhere it was a sapling, and somewhere it was a seed long mm-hmm. before it became the something that is on the street. And that's very I'm noticing that your invitation is very enhopening. for me, because it reminds me that right in the middle of whatever difficulty we're in, the finding what's beautiful can also be the spur and the nourishment that we need, not to tune out and not to despair, but to stay in and to say there are other things where beauty is being suppressed or denied to myself or to other people because of the way that we're living and the way that we've organized things. I want to do something about it because of the beauty and the piece of wood that was picked up on the street corner that I've just been introduced to, mm-hmm. reinvigorates my wish to have the world itself be more beautiful everywhere in a way that we might otherwise give up on because it's so hard, as it's hard. It's a lovely place for me to be left with this possibility of going through the world really being the one who looks with a graceful gaze and then being enlivened by it.
Yeah, me too. I'm feeling the sanctuary of it now and really grateful to be in this conversation with you, Justin. And thank you everyone for being with us and for being in the relationship of this with us and the unfolding with us. It's quite extraordinary. So with that, we are going to be back next Sunday at 9 a.m. here live again. And thank you, Justin, for this conversation today. And thank you everyone for being with us. And we'll see you next week.